much for the introduction. So good afternoon and welcome to my session, Do Your Patients Know You Care? Effective Tactics to Convey Empathy. It's really a pleasure to be up here talking about this topic because it's something that I feel very passionately about. And so I'm proud to share with you how you can be more empathetic with your patients. I wanted to start off with a quote from Theodore Roosevelt. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. For the first time ever, I do have a disclosure. And so the work that I'm going to talk about is funded in part by an AMA Women Physicians Section grant to look at gender differences in empathy and burnout amongst emergency medicine residents. Multiple collaborators were involved in the design of the content being presented, which is the empathy curriculum, and some of them are in this room right now. Here are the objectives. We're going to review the evidence-based benefits of empathy, explore factors that affect self-perception and patient perception of empathetic interactions, and then finally, we'll apply these techniques to enhance delivery of empathy, especially with difficult patient interactions. What is empathy? Take a moment to think about a time when you saw your colleague being empathetic. What did that look like? Think about a time when you yourself were empathetic. What did that feel like? Within the field of medicine, there's disagreement about the precise definition of empathy, with cognitive, emotional, affective, moral, and behavioral components described. To me, the best definition of empathy comes right out of the dictionary, to share in someone else's feelings. Regardless of how you define empathy, it leads to pro-social behavior that relieves the suffering of others. Dr. Brené Brown is a research professor at the University of Houston Graduate School of Social Work, and she spent decades studying empathy. Her groundbreaking work has been featured nationally. And so I wanted to share with you her take on empathy.
So what is empathy, and why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions, where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment, not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, climb down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So, I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
empathy has its roots in neuroscience. Emotions, as well as empathy, are grounded in the autonomic nervous system. And so when you're in a difficult patient interaction, you feel your heart rate increasing. You feel your respiratory rate increasing. You get sweaty, you get anxious. This is because your interaction is activating your fight or flight response. And so you are reacting to the patient, and the patient is reacting to you. They can tell how you feel. And that's why you need attentive observation of your own behavior. So let's talk a little bit about some of the evidence-based benefits to empathy. And there are many out there. It's true that empathy equals a happy patient and happy you. Medical professionals who communicate with empathy have higher patient satisfaction ratings. There are 8 references that talk about this. Adherence to treatment recommendations increases when medical professionals deliver compassionate, patient-centered care. 6 references. Empathy even results in better patient outcomes, like improved hemoglobin A1C levels and fewer days lost from work. Speaking of medical outcomes, take a look at this paper. Here, the authors evaluated the impact of your bedside manner on patient outcomes. They included randomized controlled trials in adult patients in which the patient-clinician relationship was systematically manipulated, and the outcomes were objective or they were validated subjective measures. 13 studies met eligibility criteria, and they looked at outcomes like quality of life, pain, depression, weight loss. They looked at asthma, blood pressure, and smoking quit rates. What they found, their conclusion was that the patient-clinician relationship has a small but statistically significant effect on healthcare outcomes. I feel sure that in the future we're going to see the impact of empathy on outcomes continue to grow. Patients aren't the only ones that benefit from empathy. There's something in it for you as well. When we communicate with empathy, it reduces our burnout. It improves our job satisfaction. Enhanced empathetic care and physician well-being are highly correlated. Empathy can reduce our malpractice claims. 4 references that speak about this point. And when you think about what's happening, the majority of malpractice claims are the result of breakdowns in communication. It's when we do things like acting rushed, when we act arrogant, when we interrupt our patients, when we don't listen to them, when we don't show concern for who they are and what's happened to them. Empathy can improve the quality of interactions with others. This is not just with patients and their family members, but between you and your colleagues, between you and your loved ones at home. Patients gave higher ratings of clinical competence to medical students who are empathetic, and so it changes patients' perception of you. Physician empathy can even lower healthcare costs because patient-centered communication styles are associated with lower diagnostic test expenditures. So we've heard about all of these benefits to empathy, but why is it so hard? And so here are some challenges to empathy. First, and I think the number one on the list of challenges to empathy is difficult patients. Think about your difficult patients. We've all had experiences with them. What do they look like? They're demanding. They manipulate us. They may have multiple chief complaints. They challenge us. They're non-compliant. You may see them in your emergency department frequently. They have psychiatric illness or substance abuse problems. And as I'm mentioning these difficult patients and you're thinking about your difficult patients, take note of how you feel. Are you ready to fight? Are you ready to flight? So it activates your autonomic nervous system. Take note of how you feel right now, because your patients can tell when you walk in the room that that's what you feel. Being a doctor is very stressful. We have a high level of responsibility and little control over the outcome. We take care of sick people all the time. People come to us sick, they're scared, they're hurting. They have nowhere else to go. And their emotional needs drain us. We see bad patient outcomes in our careers, which affect us. We lack time to talk to patients. We're always in a rush. We can't tell patients, stop coming to my emergency department. We can't tell them to schedule a visit later. We can't tell them we'll give them a call to catch up. We don't have a pre-existing doctor-patient relationship. And then on top of that, we have disjointed EMRs. We have a fragmented healthcare system, making access to information difficult. You may feel unsure about what to do. EM is full of undifferentiated patients that come to us with complexity and ambiguity. Multiple tasks, frequent interruptions. This has become part of our job description. You may not have your self-care needs met. When was the last time that you went to the bathroom or ate something during your shift? Struggling with work-life balance. And so to me, this is number two on the list of challenges to empathy. Medicine has this powerful tendency to push all of our other life priorities to the side. And our training reinforces our innate workaholism. And as we get older and our family responsibilities increase, we struggle. There's this tension between work and our larger life. We don't know how to set and maintain boundaries. Struggling with work-life balance ultimately leads to burnout, which affects 70% of us in emergency medicine. And so while there are so many challenges to empathy, it's not impossible. And so I'm going to teach you how to be empathetic without wearing a patient gown. And so empathy can be taught. The authors of this article put together an empathy curriculum that is based in mindfulness, and they delivered it to 70 primary care physicians. And what they found was that education can reduce burnout and it can increase empathy, both short-term and long-term. Here, the authors put together an empathy curriculum that they tested with 70 residents at an academic teaching hospital. And what they found was that patients rated those residents that had received the training as more empathetic than their control group peers. The first author of this article, Dr. Helen Reese, took that empathy curriculum and turned it into an online education program that you can purchase to increase your empathetic skills. Empathetics has been taken by over 1,000 healthcare professionals, according to the website. I took this course myself, and I found it to be very practical and very relevant, easy to incorporate into our clinical careers, but it does cost a couple hundred dollars. And so as part of the AMA grant, I learned a lot about empathy. And so what I decided to do was create my own curriculum based on best practices from the literature, conversations with content experts, my own experiences with my patients, and existing patient communication courses. And so what I'm going to present to you are the ABCs of empathy. And it's all common sense. There's nothing earth-shattering or groundbreaking here. It's all common sense and very important. And so this is the overview slide where I'm going to present to you the ABCs, and then we'll talk about each component individually. So the first thing is A is for awareness of yourself, of your others, and surroundings. B is to breathe and be present. C is to care. And this is really the most important part of the ABCs. You want to care. You need to care. And so let's talk about the awareness of self. This is about being mindful and being aware of what's going on inside of you. So how do you feel? Pause for a moment and think about it. Are you tired? Are you hungry or thirsty? Are you overloaded? Are you scared because you don't know what to do? Can't wait for the shift to be over? Are you feeling sad or depressed? Do you have stressors with your family or your friends before your shift even begins? Who are your difficult patients? Pay particular attention to that. And so once you've taken note of yourself, there are things that you can do to self-manage. And these are just a few suggestions. Sleep, not during your shift, of course. This is before your shift. Step away from the situation if it's emotionally intense. Go to the bathroom. Eat or drink something. Breathe. Ask for help. Talk to a colleague who's on shift with you, or reach out to your mentor. Vent to someone. Let out that frustration. Have fun. Find meaning and value in your work. Seek out counseling if it's getting difficult to self-manage. And so I put this first on the ABCs because we need to be able to take care of ourselves before we can take care of others. Now we're going to talk about awareness of others. And so I want to show you this fantastic video about the human connection. It's a very powerful video. So just think about how that affects you. The other part of A is awareness of surroundings. And so what is around you? Look at the people at the bedside, privacy, and position. And so what can you do to manage surroundings? Acknowledge people who are at the bedside, because they can shed great light on the patient's condition. Look at who's not there. Call the family member, the primary care doctor. Close the door or draw the curtain. Find a private room if you're conveying bad news or asking sensitive questions. Sit if possible. I know it can be a luxury sometimes. And think about the location of the computer. Are you creating a barrier between you and the patient? The first part of B is to breathe. So there's a couple of methods. The one that I like is 4-7-8. It's very easy. You breathe in through your nose to a count of four. You hold your breath for a count of seven. And then you exhale through your mouth to a count of eight. You can use diaphragmatic breathing. And it doesn't even have to be anything fancy. Just take a deep breath. Be present. This is the other part of the B's. So introductions matter. Use the patient's name. Include visitors at the bedside. Ask who they are and what their relationship is to the patient. Give a handshake or hello, depending on your style. Be present. This involves active listening. The most important thing that you can do is read the patient. And this is about increasing your emotional intelligence. Read the patient's verbal and nonverbal body language. What are they thinking? What are they feeling? What is it like to be in their shoes? Sit, if you can. Make eye contact. Note their eye color. Lean forward. It shows that you're engaged. Nod your head. Shows that you're interested. Watch your tone of voice and your facial expressions. Use tones that convey warmth. Touch, if appropriate. It depends on cultural preferences. And now we get to see. So what is an empathetic statement? This is a reflecting statement about a patient's perceived emotion. Make it as soon as that emotion becomes apparent to you. And so validation lets you let the patient know that his or her feelings are understandable. You're connecting with the emotion that the patient is having. You're not defending, questioning, denying, reassuring, or correcting it. And so empathetic statements begin with words like these. You look blank. And this is the one that I use the most often. You look upset. You look like you're in pain. You look like you don't want to talk to me. And then here are some other examples. Empathetic statements use words like these. You're connecting. You want to understand concerns. And so this is your patient's concerns and their family's concerns. It may not be the same thing as the chief complaint. Ask your patients directly, what are you worried about? What do you think is going on? Talk about your concerns. Collaborate on a plan. The last part of C is to end with a question. And so patients understand just a fraction of their medical care. And so ask your patients, what questions do you have for me? It's open-ended, and it's an invitation. So here's a summary of the ABCs of empathy. I feel confident that if you use these ABCs with your next encounter, you're going to see a benefit for your patient, and you're going to see a benefit for yourself. So thank you so much for your attention.